Chapter 45. Business as a man of that character to marry Berta, I should like to ask. That's what I say, returned Mountclear, revealing his satisfaction at Sol's estimate of his noble brother. It showed that he had calculated well in coming here. My brother is getting old, and he has lived strangely. Your sister is a highly respectable young lady. And he is not respectable, you mean? I know he is not. I worked near Enkworth once. I cannot say that, returned Mountclear. Possibly a certain fraternal feeling repressed a direct descent. And yet this was the only representation which could be expected to prejudice the young man against the wedding, if he were such an one as the visitor supposed Sol, to be a man vulgar in sentiment and ambition, but pure in his anxiety for his sister's happiness. At any rate, we are agreed in thinking that this would be an unfortunate marriage for both, added Mountclear. About both I don't know. It may be a good thing for him. When do you say it is to be, sir? Tomorrow. Yes. I don't know what to do. Said Sol, walking up and down. If half what I have heard is true, I would lose a winter's work to prevent her marrying him. What does she want to go mixing in with people who despise her for? Now look here, Mr. Mountclear, since you have been, and called me out to talk this over, it is only fair, that you should tell me the exact truth about your brother. Is it a lie, or is it true, that he is not fit to be the husband of a decent woman? That is a curious inquiry, said Mountclear, whose manner and aspect, neutral as a winter landscape, had little in common with Sol's warm and unrestrained bearing. There are reasons why I think your sister will not be happy with him. Then it is true what they say, said Sol, bringing down his fist upon the table. I know your meaning well enough. What's to be done? If I could only see her this minute, she might be kept out of it. You think your presence would influence your sister, if you could see her before the wedding? I think it would. But who's to get at her? I am going, so you had better come on with me, unless it would be best for your father to come. Perhaps it might, said the bewildered Sol. But he will not be able to get away, and it's no use for Dan to go. If anybody goes, I must. If she has made up her mind, nothing can be done by writing to her. I leave at once to see Lord Mountclear, the other continued. I feel that as my brother is evidently ignorant of the position of Mrs. Peterwin's family and connections, it is only fair in me, as his nearest relative, to make them clear to him before it is too late. You mean that, if he knew her friends were working people, he would not think of her as a wife? 'Tis a reasonable thought. But make your mind easy. As he has told him. I make a great mistake, if she has for a moment thought of concealing that from him. She may not have deliberately done so. But and I say this with no ill feeling, it is a matter known to few, and she may have taken no steps to undeceive him. I hope to bring him to see the matter clearly. Unfortunately the thing has been so secret and hurried that there is barely time. I knew nothing until this morning, never dreamt of such a preposterous occurrence. Preposterous. If it should come to pass, she would play her part as his lady as well as any other woman, and better. I wish there was no more reason for fear on my side than there is on yours. Things have come to a sore head, when she is not considered lady enough for such as he. But perhaps your meaning is, that if your brother were to have a son, you would lose your heir presumptive title to the coronet of Mountclear? Well, 'twould be rather hard for ye, now I come to think God upon my life, 'twould. The suggestion is as delicate as the atmosphere of this vile room. But let your ignorance be your excuse, my man. It is hardly worth while for us to quarrel when we both have the same object in view. Do you think so? That's true. When do you start, sir? We must leave almost at once, said Mountclear, looking at his watch. If we cannot catch the 2 o'clock train, there is no getting there tonight, and tomorrow we could not possibly arrive before one. I wish there was time for me to go and tidy myself a bit, said Sol, anxiously looking down at his working clothes. I suppose you would not like me to go with you like this? Confound the clothes. If you cannot start in 5 minutes, we shall not be able to go at all. Very well, then wait while I run across to the shop, then I am ready. How do we get to the station? My carriage is at the corner waiting. When you come out I will meet you at the gates. Sol then hurried downstairs, and a minute or two later Mr. Mountclear followed, looking like a man bent on policy at any price. The carriage was brought round by the time that Sol reappeared from the yard. He entered and sat down beside Mountclear, not without a sense that he was spoiling good upholstery. The coachman then allowed the lash of his whip to alight with the force of a small fly upon the horses, which set them up in an angry trot. Sol rolled on beside his new acquaintance with the shamefaced look of a man going to prison in a van, for pedestrians occasionally gazed at him, full of what seemed to himself to be ironical surprise. I am afraid I ought to have changed my clothes after all, he said, writhing under a perception of the contrast between them. Not knowing anything about this, I ain't a bit prepared. If I had got even my second best hat, it wouldn't be so bad. It makes no difference, said Mountclear inanimately. Or I might have brought my portmanteau with some things. It really is not important. On reaching the station they found there were yet a few minutes to spare, which Sol made use of in writing a note to his father, to explain what had occurred. 42. The Doncastles' residence, and outside the same, Mrs. Doncastle's dressing bell had rung, but Menlove, the lady's maid, having at the same time received a letter by the evening post, paused to read it, before replying to the summons. Egworth Court, Wednesday. Darling Louisa, I can assure you that I am no more likely than yourself to form another attachment, as you will perceive by what follows. Before we left town I thought that to be able to see you occasionally was sufficient for happiness, but down in this lonely place the case is different. In short, my dear, I ask you to consent to a union with me as soon as you possibly can. Your prettiness has won my eyes and lips completely, sweet, and I lie awake at night to think of the golden curls you allowed to escape from their confinement on those nice times of private clothes, when we walked in the park and slipped the bonds of service, which you were never born to any more than one. Had not my own feelings been so strong, I should have told you at the first dash of my pen that what I expected is coming to pass at last. The old dog is going to be privately married to Mrs. P.S., indeed, and the wedding is coming off tomorrow, secret as the grave. All her friends will doubtless leave service on account of it. What he does now makes little difference to me, of course, as I had already given warning, but I shall stick to him like a Briton in spite of it. He has today made me a present, and a further £5 for yourself, expecting you to hold your tongue on every matter connected with Mrs. P.S. friends, and to say nothing to any of them about this marriage until it is over. His lordship impressed this upon me very strong and familiar as a brother, and of course we obey his instructions to the letter, for I need hardly say that, unless he keeps his promise to help me in setting up the shop, our nuptials cannot be consumed. His help depends upon our obedience, as you are aware. This, and much more, was from her very last lover, Lord Mountclair's valet, who had been taken in hand directly as he had convinced herself of Joey's hopeless youthfulness. The missive sent Mrs. Menlove's spirits soaring like spring larks. She flew upstairs in answer to the bell with a joyful, triumphant look, which the illuminated figure of Mrs. Doncastle in her dressing room could not quite repress. One could almost forgive Menlove her arts, when so modest a result brought such vast content. Mrs. Doncastle seemed inclined to make no remark during the dressing, and at last Menlove could repress herself no longer. "I should like to name something to you, M'M. Apostrophe apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe apostrophe, I shall be wishing to leave soon, if it is convenient. Apostrophe apostrophe, very well, Menlove, apostrophe," answered Mrs. Doncastle, as she serenely surveyed her right eyebrow in the glass. "Am I to take this as a formal notice? Apostrophe apostrophe, if you please. But I could stay a week or two beyond the month if suitable. I am going to be married, that's what it is, M'M. Apostrophe, oh. I am glad to hear it, though I am sorry to lose you. Apostrophe, it is Lord Mountclair's valet, Mr. Tipman, M'M. Apostrophe, apostrophe, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Menlove went on building up Mrs. Doncastle's hair while in silence. I suppose you heard the other news that arrived in town today, M'M. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said again. Lord Mountclair is going to be married tomorrow. Apostrophe, apostrophe, tomorrow? Are you quite sure? Apostrophe, oh yes, M'M. Mr. Tipman has just told me so in his letter. He is going to be married to Mrs. Peterwin. It is to be quite a private wedding. Apostrophe apostrophe, Mrs. Doncastle made no remark, and she remained in the same still position as before, but a countenance expressing transcendent surprise was reflected to Menlove by the glass. At this sight Menlove's tongue so burned to go further, and unfold the lady's relations with the butler downstairs, that she would have lost a month's wages, to be at liberty to do it. The disclosure was almost too magnificent to be repressed. To deny herself so exquisite an indulgence required an effort which nothing on earth could have sustained save the one thing that did sustain it, the knowledge that upon her silence hung the most enormous desideratum in the world, her own marriage. She said no more, and Mrs. Doncastle went away. It was an ordinary family dinner that day, but their nephew Ney happened to be present. Just as they were sitting down, Mrs. Doncastle said to her husband, "Why have you not told me of the wedding tomorrow, or don't you know anything about it?" Apostrophe, wedding? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Doncastle. Lord Mountclair is to be married to Mrs. Peterwin quite privately. Apostrophe, apostrophe, good God. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said some person. Mr. Doncastle did not speak the words. They were not spoken by Ney. They seemed to float over the room and round the walls, as if originating in some spiritualistic source. Yet Mrs. Doncastle, remembering the symptoms of attachment between Ethelberta and her nephew which had appeared during the summer, looked towards Ney instantly, as if she thought the words must have come from him after all. But Ney's face was perfectly calm. He, together with her husband, was sitting with his eyes fixed in the direction of the sideboard, and turning to the same spot she beheld Chickerel standing pale as death, his lips being parted, as if he did not know where he was. "Did you speak?" Apostrophe apostrophe, said Mrs. Doncastle, looking with astonishment at the butler. "Chickerel, what's the matter, are you ill?" Apostrophe apostrophe, said Mr. Doncastle simultaneously. "Was it you who said that?" Apostrophe, I did, sir, apostrophe, said Chickerel in a husky voice, scarcely above a whisper. "I could not help it." Apostrophe, why? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she is my daughter, and it shall be known at once. Apostrophe, apostrophe, who is your daughter? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he paused a few moments nervously. Apostrophe, Mrs. Peterwin, apostrophe, he said. Upon this announcement, Ney looked at poor Chickerel, as if he saw through him into the wall. Mrs. Doncastle uttered a faint exclamation, and leant back in her chair. The bare possibility of the truth of Chickerel's claims to such paternity shook her to pieces. When she viewed her intimacies with Ethelberta during the past season, the courtesy he had paid her, the arrangements as he had entered into to please her, above all, the dinner party which he had contrived and carried out, solely to gratify Lord Mountclere, and bring him into personal communication with the general favorite, thus making herself probably the chief, though unconscious, instrument in promoting a match by which her butler was to become father-in-law to a peer she delighted to honor. The crowd of perceptions almost took away her life. She closed her eyes in a white shiver. Do you mean to say that the lady who sat here at dinner at the same time that Lord Mountclere was present is your daughter? Asked Doncastle. Yes, sir, said Chickerel respectfully. How did she come to be your daughter? She is my daughter, sir. Did you educate her? Not altogether, sir. She was a very clever child. Lady Peterwin took a deal of trouble about her education. They were both left widows about the same time. The son died, then the father. My Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.